Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you.
One that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation.
Washington, London, Paris, Moscow are key targets. The whole world is under attack.
Who built it? The Russians? The Chinese? Martians? Canadians? I don't care! All I know is we didn't build it, and that's reason enough to assume the worst and blow up the Cane of Cum.
For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside, where no one can see it.
Soldiers and their weapons would be powerless before the onslaught of the beast. The beast. The beast. The beast from 20,000 fathoms.
Guns, tanks, bombs. They're like toys against them.
It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it. The nation and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of...
Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In Podcast.
Predators, welcome to the Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In Podcast. I am your conspiracy-loving host, Elisa Weglin, and sitting next to me is my radioactive partner in grime, Jarrett the Kaiju Man Weglin.
Hey, everybody.
We end our double feature of films based on a true story with the biggest stretch of a true story to film, The Blob.
The Blob.
The Blob.
A very simple title, but it says all you need to say.
It's all you need to know. It's The Blob.
It's really just The Blob.
There's no other way to describe this monster.
No.
Besides, it is a blob. So, this was incredibly enjoyable to watch. It was my first time around. Although we did watch the Criterion Collection version, so yeah. It was very nice, very sharp, very clean, very colorful.
Yeah, it was, man, Criterion just really hits it on the mark.
Yeah. Like, I've never seen the original were, you know, the way it was shot exactly and, you know, produced back in 1950s. But the way the Criterion cleaned it up, it was excellent.
Oh, I've only seen it as a kid on TV, and I had it recorded on a VHS tape. So this is... So those colors are on point, and yeah, Criterion always hits it out of the park. I mean, I don't... We are not sponsored by Criterion at all.
We are not sponsored by Criterion, although we would love to be.
We'll definitely take that Criterion sponsorship. That would be a great sponsorship to have.
This episode brought to you by the Criterion Collection. If you see the Criterion Collection on any DVD, you buy it.
Yeah. But yeah, those colors are like super crisp and...
Oh, yeah. It did not look like it was shot in the 50s.
No, definitely not. And, I think the only Criterion film I have is the original Godzilla. Oh, no, we have...
No, all of the Wes Andersons we have are Criterion.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have all the Wes Andersons.
I'm very, very, very particular.
Yeah.
Jarrett knows that because he's married to me. Those of you who are not married to me, I am very particular. this was my first time watching The Blob. The only thing I knew about The Blob was that movie scene when they all run out of the theater.
Yeah,
screaming.
That's definitely used in, like, commercials and all that kind of stuff.
Anytime anyone's making a reference to The Blob, it's that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most famous scene, yeah. Or just the shot of the blob outside of the theater, like, pulsating.
Yeah, if they really want to make you think it's The Blob.
Yeah, so this is our second film in our true story month.
Yeah.
So yeah, some may be surprised to find out that this movie is based on a true story, in a sense, at least.
Yes, and this is both of our true stories this month were alien based.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did not branch out as much as we should have, but we had to address these two because these are like the weirdest true story ones because Fire in the Sky, I almost said Fire Walk with Me, is not a true story. Fire in the Sky is one of the most terrifying alien abduction movies. Alien abduction stories,
yeah,
and everything, and it was super well done in the 90s.
And not enough people talk about it.
No. Every time I brought this up to anybody I knew, they were like, "What the fuck movie are you talking about?" And I was like, "Oh my god, get out of my face!"
But of course, The Blob people do talk about. It's one of the quintessential 50s B movies, and yeah, I mean, it's shown as a example for 50s B-movies all the time.
Yeah, but so, when you told me this was based on a true story, I was like, there's no way we can't include this.
Yeah, exactly.
In our true story month. I mean, we might do another double feature of true stories and talk about some other movies that are based on a true story.
Yeah, but definitely.
These were the two that are like, what?
Yeah, themes will come back, I'm sure.
There's
always sequels in the movie world.
There's sequels in the movie world. There's sequels in the podcast world.
Exactly.
Bring it around. So let's start talking about the movie version, because we don't want to blow our load too quick talking about what's real and what's fake. So the movie starts off with the very teenage Steve McQueen.
Yeah, the very teenage 28-year-old Steve McQueen.
He's got forehead wrinkles. And he's just saying, Janie girl, Janie girl, Janie girl. Oh my gosh. He's billed in this movie as Stephen McQueen.
Yeah, Stephen McQueen.
But he's Steve McQueen.
Yeah, well, this was, I think he was only like five movies deep in his career.
This was the movie that brought him to the top.
Yeah.
So some say that he did it to sound more, you know, older, cool. But at the same time, it's like maybe they just fucked it up. Like, you know how many times I've been in like a playbill as Alyssa Breen?
I can't imagine. My name gets
so many times.
My name gets super fucked up, and I'm not even in anything.
But to be Steve McQueen in your first, like, huge role.
Oh.
And to be like, hey, man, my name's not Steven.
And his character is also Steve, so, in the movie.
So how could you screw that up? So, but, so they're making out.
Him and his girl, Janie.
Him and his girl, Janie, but she doesn't like to be called Janie.
No, she's not that kind of girl.
She's not that kind of girl. She's like, you do this to all the girls. And he's like, no. I promise.
So they're at like a makeout point in his, I think it's a Plymouth or something. I don't know. Anyway,
it's bright blue.
Yeah, in his convertible.
It's a nice car.
And they see a fallen star, and she's like, "Don't we usually wish on a fallen star?" No, I make out on a fallen star.
Yeah, give me that tongue.
And he sees like a big fallen star, and he's like, "I want to see where it went."
No longer caring about making out in the hormones. Give me the aliens.
So he goes and chases the fallen star, and it lands in a little patch of ground behind this old man's house.
Yeah, and he abandons his dog to go look at it. And spoiler alert, that dog does not have a good ending. But he goes to look at it, and he pokes it with a stick. You know, great idea. Poke anything you don't understand with a stick. It's like a rock with like a, it looks like a tiny moon.
Yeah.
Got like little holes. Craters. That's what I was looking for. So he pokes it with a stick.
It cracks open like an egg.
Yeah, like opens like an egg, and then he pokes the goo in it.
There's some goo.
Yeah, and then he like puts the goo up to his face, and he's like, ha, and just like lets it drip on him.
It crawls on his hand, and then all of a sudden it just attaches.
And he's screaming and crying. And then he runs out in front of Steve's car.
Yeah.
And
he's like, I can't get it off.
Yeah, he's like screaming at the kids. So they put him in the car and they take him to the doctors. And the doctor's like, what the hell is this thing? And they're like, I don't know, it's eating his hand. So
the doctor takes his goddamn time, by the way. He's like, all right, I better look in my book, see what this might be.
Yeah, and he just keeps, like, looking over the rim of his glasses every time, like, something weird moves in the room. And then goes back to, like, another hour of looking at his books.
And then he's like, oh, I better call my nurse.
I gotta amputate his arm. But I gotta wait for the nurse to get here.
It's growing. I better amputate the arm. Okay. Oh, and then finally, the nurse gets there. And the nurse is like, okay, we better prep this guy. And then she goes into the room where the guy is. And he's not there no more. And then she looks over. And there's just the big wad of blob.
A big goo pile. It looks like that slime you got in like a little plastic jar when you were a kid in the 90s.
Yeah.
And you'd make it fart.
Yeah, like, gack. It's like clear gack.
Well, it's kind of like a pinky... Well, at least in the Criterion version. I don't know what color it is.
No, it was almost always pink.
Yeah, and it gets redder as it eats more people.
Yeah.
But, and it also, this whole time, he had told, like, those teenagers, Steve and Jane, to go look for more clues.
Yeah, I don't know what they were going to find.
He's like, hey, teenagers, it's like midnight. Go look for more clues. And so, and then these kids get in like a drag race for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
Like these kids are like harassing them. And then you find out later they're like best friends. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
They kind of set them up to be like bullies, but then they're actually just friends.
Yeah, they're like their best friends who end up solving everything with them. But anyway, so the blob is there, and the nurse, the guy's like, throw this acid on it. It's over there. Don't touch it. Don't touch it with your hands. And she throws the acid on it, and it does jack shit. And actually, I found out when I was researching this that acid is like one of the weakest acids. It doesn't do fuck all. It like it's for like warts or something.
Well, I mean, that's the only thing that she had, so, and then after...
But he acted like it was, like, super gonna do something.
And then the acid doesn't work, so he's like, oh, let me go get my gun.
Yeah, he's like, okay, now time to shoot it. Like, oh, who would look like a blob of goo that had just eaten a person and is like, I bet you if I shoot it, it's gonna do something.
This, this clear glob of goo has no eyes, no brain, no vital organs.
It doesn't even have any sensory organ. Like, nothing.
All it does is really sense temperature, I think.
Like, I was trying to think in terms of, like, the graboids and tremors. Like, the graboids, they can feel vibrations, but they have, like, things on the sides of them and stuff. I was like, there is no way this thing can sense anything.
No.
How does it doesn't have even a brain to, like, process the information? So I'm like, what the fuck?
It's more like a fungus or bacteria.
He was calling it like a parasite.
That's what I'm thinking it is. It's like an alien parasite, like a fungus or something.
I just don't know how he possibly, as a doctor, could have thought a gun would have done fuck all.
Yeah, but that's where your mind goes. The most destructive thing.
Fight or flight. Get a gun.
That's the most destructive thing a human
Welcome
can think
Welcome to America.
Of. That's the thing in
no,
our
No, that's the most American thing you can do. That's not the most human thing. That's the most American. Get a gun.
What would you do?
What I would do? I would have run for the fucking door. It's a blob of slime.
I would at least try shooting it.
No, I would have run for the door. I would have gotten my car. I would have driven away.
Okay.
Because the blob can't drive.
Yeah.
What's the top speed of the blob? Get away from the blob.
Depends what kind of car it's in.
I'm not the hero in this situation. I'm not the one saving nobody. I'm getting in my car, and I'm getting the fuck out of Dodge.
Okay.
You sound so upset with me right now.
It's just disappointing.
It's disappointing?
Yeah.
That I would want to save myself.
No, it's just anticlimactic.
You would want to shoot it. We've seen that it doesn't work.
Well, you just said yourself that it was slow. I would at least try to shoot it, since it's no harm to me.
But you know it doesn't work.
He didn't see the movie. He was in the movie. He didn't see the end of the movie and then be like, oh, well, I better not try to shoot it because I saw the movie.
Well, anyway.
Okay. Anyways... They don't. The kids go up to where it landed again, and they don't find anything except for the rock.
Yeah, they just find like a piece of the rock, and then they act like it's real hot the whole time. They're
hot potato.
Yeah, they throw it to each other like, feel it.
But they do find the man's dog, and the dog does not die. He actually gets away. They said, "Oh yeah, I saw him run away."
That time.
Yeah, who knows? Anyways. So they do take the dog with them, and they go to the police department after that, right?
Yes, and they're like, well, no, because they saw the doctor getting eaten by the blob.
Oh, yeah, they go back to the doctor.
Like, yeah, because the nurse got eaten by the blob.
And Steve sees the doctor get eaten by the blob.
Yeah, because he goes back to tell the doctor his findings.
Yeah, which is nothing.
I found a rock in a hole. And so he, like, goes around the side and sees the doctor, like, flailing out a window. And
yeah,
like,
he has the blob all over his head and body.
And he's like, he's dead. And so they go to the police because police listen to everything.
Yeah, especially in the 50s when all those teenagers are so rambunctious.
Yeah. There's, like, specifically a cop that's, like, anti-teenager.
Yeah, there's one cop that's pretty cool. He's the one that lets him off for speeding and drag racing backwards, which would never happen these days.
No. There's no cop in the world who'd be like, teenagers can drag race backwards. Have a nice night.
Drag racing's one thing, but backwards. Anyway, but there's one cop where his wife was killed by a drunk teenager. That's why he...
That's what happened?
Yeah, that's why he hated teenagers. All teenagers.
See, like, the only thing I got was he said, like, they probably know about my military record.
Well, yeah.
And I was like, what? They, like, never explained that, but I guess that they did.
No, yeah,
I just,
yeah,
like,
he said that.
Didn't understand.
Yeah, that's why he hates all teenagers.
Because
one teenager was drunk and he killed his wife.
Well.
Anyways, they go.
And they tell him, like, hey, listen, the doc's dead. And then the one guy who hates teenagers is like, I'm going to put you in jail. And the guy who's, like, reasonable is like, well, let's go see. And they go and look, and everyone's gone. Blob is gone. People are gone, obviously, because they're inside the blob.
Yeah, they absorbed.
And the office is completely wrecked.
Yeah.
And he's like, you probably vandalized this. And he's like, I didn't, I swear.
But there's one room that the doctor was absorbed in by the blob that was locked from the inside, and the window was locked from the inside. So that's the fishy part. But they're still like, these kids.
Yeah, you guys are playing a joke. And it's like, okay. And then the lady who, like, owns the building, she comes in and
she's like. She's just a neighbor.
She's just a neighbor. She's just, because back in the 50s, you could be fucking horrible and intrusive, and everybody was like, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So she, like,
just
comes in.
Just walk in my house.
Yeah. So she comes in, she goes, oh, the doc's going to be so mad. And she starts cleaning up a crime scene.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm looking at Jarrett like, oh, my God. And she's just like, I better clean this stuff up.
They're still polite to her. They're like, you can clean up tomorrow.
Yeah. And she's like, I got my job and you've got yours. And it's like,
can I just dust around the fingerprints? She says,
no, lady, get the fuck out.
Bitch, get out of here.
Bitch, this ain't your house. So the cops, like, basically call their parents because they're like, you need to go home. You've had enough for one night. So, of course, the girl's dad is super pissed and, like, the guy has ruined you. And the guy's dad is, like, super chill and, like, what's wrong, son? So they all go home, and the kids, of course, don't stay home.
Yeah, they sneak out.
What kid stays home? So they go back out, and they're like, we're going to find the blob. So they're going to go find the blob. So they go, and they find their friends who are at the Midnight Spook Show.
Spook Show.
Spook Show.
I thought you didn't like Spook Show, Steve.
They're playing some, like, Bela Lugosi movie or some crap.
Yeah.
So they
not
go.
Not crap. Bela Lugosi is
Bela,
a treasure.
I'm not saying, like, it's crap. I'm just, you know. You know how us Californians use the word crap. It's just an adjective for nothing.
Yeah.
Like how we call everyone dude for no reason. We call objects dude for no reason.
Dude.
Dude. Oh, man. So they go and they find their friends in the spook show. And their friends all of a sudden have girlfriends. And then one dude has a dude friend. I was like, that guy has a boyfriend?
No.
And Jared's like, no, that's the guy they stole the car from earlier. And blah. And I was like, where are you getting the storyline? Because it just looks like those two dudes have girlfriends and that guy has a boyfriend.
It's because I was listening.
Well, you know, I just am taking in the whole experience. I don't know how you get these small little plot lines.
It's because they... never mind. I'm not going to explain it. One of them has, like, a real dish. One of them's got, like, a Marilyn Monroe-looking girl. And then the other one's kind of, eh. And then Steve's girl's kind of, eh. Like, at the bottom of the line.
You leave her alone. She's adorable.
Sorry.
She's got freckles and stuff.
She has no freckles.
It looked like that on the film.
I think that was just her face.
Jarrett's hashtag not feminist.
Anyways, so they gather them up and they spread out all across town.
Yeah, they're like, let's look for the blob. So they end up finding the blob in Steve's dad's grocery store.
Yeah.
And he had eaten the guy who, like, closes the place. And the blob scares Jane, and she falls over.
Just immediately.
This is where they also find the dog.
Yeah.
And so, immediately, once again, lose the dog. And this time, dog gets eaten by blob.
No, he doesn't.
Yes.
No, he doesn't.
Where does the dog go? The dog's barking, and then the blob disappears.
Okay. They go into the refrigerator.
Yes.
And you can hear the dog barking, and you think that the dog gets eaten by the blob.
Yeah, because she keeps going, the little dog.
They're in the refrigerator, and the blob starts to go under the door of the refrigerator, like the blob can do. It can squeeze in spaces. And you think the dog gets eaten right there because the dog barking stops. And once the blob kind of leaves him alone, because we find out later it doesn't like cold.
Yes.
They go outside and they're met with their friends again. And they're like, oh, but I got the dog. And then one of the friends is like, oh, no, we saw the dog run away.
Oh, I thought they were talking about they saw it running towards the grocery store and that's where they found it.
No. There's so much you missed on this movie.
I was really paying attention. I wasn't tired. I had a good day.
I know.
Don't judge me. You're being judgy.
No.
Anyway. So, the blob's in the grocery store, and they're like, we gotta get the town's attention. No one's listening to us. Because they try and call the police station again, and the guy who hates teenagers picks up the phone, and he's like, I'm gonna get you kids if you're all in on it. And he just is, like, yelling at the phone.
So, somehow they get the air raid sirens on.
Yeah, they get all the sirens.
And I think they call the fire department.
Yeah.
And then they're all honking their car horns.
Yeah, and then once the whole town gets there, because apparently, like, in that town, when, you know, horns go off, everyone just goes to where the horns are.
Oh, small town living, folks.
So they all show up, and they all start just yelling at him, like, there's a monster. He's gonna get you.
And the cop that hates teenagers is already in the store, and he's like, I'm the only monster here or something. Like,
no. Well, and then Dave shows up.
Yeah.
Who's the good cop.
He's a good cop.
And he's like, okay, you know, I understand. Because the teenage kid, Steve's like, would I be this terrified if this was a joke? And so Dave's like, no, it's not a joke. I get it. So they're, like, going to go look for the blob. So there's no blob in the grocery store. It's moved on.
Yeah. And then it shows from inside the theater, the air vents. All of a sudden, this jello mold pushes itself through the air vent into the projection room, and then when the reel is supposed to be changed by the projectionist, it doesn't, and everyone's mad. Why didn't you change the reel? We're watching a movie. And it turns out that the projectionist has been killed.
By the blob! And then the blob, like, oozes out of the holes in the back, and the audience runs out of the theater. Ah!
That's the famous scene.
Yeah, everyone runs out. Famous scene.
And then everyone runs towards the store, and then finally Steve is vindicated.
Finally, the teenagers have won the town!
You gotta listen to the teenagers sometimes.
So the cops go to the theater, and Dave's like, it's the most terrible thing I've ever seen. And the blob comes out of the theater and then just immediately, like, globs onto a diner. Yeah. And then out of nowhere comes Jane's little brother.
He's like shooting up his cap gun.
Yeah, a cap gun at it. And then he runs into the diner before the blob gets there. And they all, of course, you know, Steve and Jane run after him. And then the blob covers the diner.
Yep.
So they're trapped inside the diner. And
they're like, we'll take care of the blob. I think maybe if we take down a power line on it, it'll shock it to death. So the bad cop, to redeem himself, he was in the Marine Corps, so they give him a sniper rifle, and he shoots one of the, I think they're called capacitors, on the power line, and it takes down the power line onto the blob, and it just goes, ch-ch-ch-ch, but it doesn't do anything.
Well, it sets the diner on fire.
Well, yeah, it sets the diner on fire. But then that's where they get the brilliant idea on how to kill it. Well, not how to kill it, but... So they're using the fire extinguishers to put out the fire on the inside, and then they find out that the blob doesn't like the cold from the fire extinguishers.
And then Steve's like, yes, when we were in the freezer earlier.
So they're yelling in the phone, use the CO2 fire, because they're far away.
Use the Dave! CO2! Dave!
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 Because they're far away from the phone, so they have to yell.
Yeah.
Dave, use a CO2 fire extinguisher.
I mean, luckily, like, the blob hadn't taken over the phone, and
so it's mostly kids, so they scour the town for all the CO2 fire extinguishers.
And then they're just, like, standing there, everyone in a line spraying the blob. And then, so the blob rolls off of the diner, and, you know, everyone gets out. And they freeze the blob!
And then the last scene is they're dropping the blob onto the Arctic.
And then they say, like, will the blob, you know, be gone? And they're like, as long as the Arctic stays cold.
As long as the Arctic stays cold.
And then there's a question mark at the end.
The end turns into a question mark. So that's... They knew about global warming back then.
They knew. They knew the blob would be back, everybody, dun, dun, if it was real. So, yeah, that's the movie story. The real story, Jarrett, if you will.
Yeah, so the story goes, in 1950, two veteran Philadelphia police officers, Joe Keenan and John Collins, saw a large sparkly mass fall to Earth. They chased it and found the mass was purple and indeed glittering. The cops described it as purple jelly and was approximately 6 feet in diameter, about a foot high at the apex. The mass was pulsating, and when the officers turned off their flashlights, the jelly seemed to glow as if it was made of bioluminescent material.
Do you think it made a noise like...
I think it was like...
Yeah, you think it made that noise?
Yeah, probably.
I think they should make both. Okay.
Okay.
folks, that was the real blob.
Yeah,
for
that's,
you.
That's
actual recording. Actual recording.
Yeah, that's the recording. We were just playing the recording right there.
Yeah, that wasn't us just making mouth noises.
Yeah. So Keenan and Collins called for backup, and two more officers showed up. They too witnessed the wonder of the blob. Sergeant Joe Cook drew the short straw and picked up a handful of the seemingly solid object. It instantly broke off in his hand, with tiny globules sticking to his skin. Within seconds, those globules evaporated, and he was left with an odorless scum on his hand. After 30 minutes, the blob evaporated entirely. All four of these officers believed that the blob was a living organism.
A living orgasm.
So, we actually have a copy of the government report. Can you believe that?
We do, everybody.
Yeah, we have our sources, Google Images.
No, our sources are inside the government, Jarrett.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't tell government people we just Google shit.
Well.
We do thorough research day in and day out. We're up all night with cups of coffee.
Yeah. And we're on our typewriters. So we have a government report taken by Philadelphia Strategic Air Command.
And I am going to read it for
Yes, you. I read the excerpt from Travis Walton's book last show. So Elisa will read the report from Strategic Air Command.
And here we
go.
Go. So, this is from the United States government. The date is September 27th, 1950. It is to Mr. A.H. Belmont. Who it is from is withheld.
Oh, my
information
God.
From the government.
We withheld it just to hide his identity. He's probably dead. But.
He's probably dead. It doesn't matter. The subject is flying saucers.
Yep.
SAC Cornelius of Philadelphia called at 10:45 a.m. today and stated that yesterday evening, while two officers of the Philadelphia Police Department were cruising in their scout car, they saw through the windshield an object descending slowly to the earth, which appeared at first glance to be a parachute. When the officers first noticed the object, it was at treetop level and was described as being 6 feet in diameter. It landed in a field nearby, and the officers, upon examining it, noted that it gave out a purplish glow, which was almost a mist. The officers summoned two other police officers. After looking at the object for some time, they attempted to pick it up. The object broke, leaving a slight, odorless residue. Over a period of about 25 minutes, which the officer spent watching the object, it completely disintegrated. The officers further commented that the object was so light that when it hit the field, it did not even bend the weeds or the grass it fell on. Mr. Cornelius said that he had called the local office of the Air Force, but the individual with whom he spoke said that he knew nothing about them and was not aware that his office was looking into reports of this type. Mr. Cornelius desired to know what further action should be taken by him. I told Mr. Cornelius that he was correct in referring this matter to the local offices of OSI and that he should direct a letter to the Bureau incorporating all available information concerning the matter and that we here upon its receipt, in turn, would bring it to the attention of the OSI headquarters. And that, my friends, is a report under the subject name Flying Saucers.
Yes, and we, if we end up dead in a ditch somewhere.
You know why.
You know what happened to us.
It's because we're reading government information that's perfectly available on the internet.
And
you need
to keep our cause going, folks.
Keep it going. Keep talking about the purple goo outer space.
You need to start a podcast in your bedroom and keep our cause going.
Don't tell them what we record. You're telling these people way too much information. Where we get our information, where we record our information. We're in a bunker. You don't know where we get our information. You don't know our real names.
We're in a bunker. And yeah. Deep within our apartment complex in Los Angeles.
Once again, too much. We are not in Los Angeles. We are in.
You just said
Puerto Rico.
No, I don't want to be there.
Stop it. We're in Australia.
All right. So this is definitely an unusual sci-fi horror B movie. Especially since this monster type is definitely different from the ones around. It's not like an entity with a face, I would say.
It's not something with a mind. It can't be explained.
Yeah.
You know, it's chaos without reason.
Yeah, I mean, one of the popular movies about, 5 years before this was Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, so that was a big lizard, and yeah, I mean, this, like chaos, like you said, chaos without reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like them where it's giant ants that grew from atomic power. It's not Frankenstein's monster. It's not Dracula. It's not a monster that has a purpose.
Yeah.
The blob has no purpose. It came here. We don't know what it is, how it is, what to do.
I mean,
it's very odd. It's an odd choice. Like, you would think that, especially with the Red Scare coming and being like very prevalent during this time, this would be very terrifying for people. But they loved it.
Yeah, I mean, you can boil it down to it may have a very, very primal purpose. It may just be the feeding purpose. Because they said, oh, it's a parasite. Okay, well, they just want to feed on things. Okay, you can boil it down to that. But even the animalistic creatures of that time, when they just want to feed, they have more of a mind of their own. They're kind of...
Well, they hunt. You know, and this thing kills anything, anyone... You know, and it's just...
And it just gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah. And it just kills everything in its way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it hunts. It just does.
And it wasn't sent by anything or created by anything, really. It just kind of came from nowhere, from the blackness of space.
Yes. As one of those kids said, this once used to be as big as a moon. The rock. as big as a moon. So, it was set in motion by Jack H. Harris, a bored Pennsylvania film distributor, determined to break into the movie production. He had little money to make the project, so he turned to a Pennsylvania-based studio called Valley Forge, a company that had made around 250 religious films.
Yay.
But it had never attempted a feature before. And so, it was a group of devout Christians who ended up making one of the most successful sci-fi monster movies of the 1950s.
Do you think that the blob is a metaphor for Jesus?
I definitely think the blob himself is Christian.
Yeah?
I think, like, the blob himself believes in Jesus, you know?
Do you think that they just... It's like they just won't accept him into their culture, and they just ended up sending him to the Arctic, just like they sent Jesus to the Arctic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, except the blob didn't come back after 3 days.
He may just be walking back.
I think we're trying too hard with this metaphor.
But it's funny.
I know in my heart the blob believed in Jesus.
Yeah, it's just funny to think.
Oh, man. So it was originally titled The Molten Meteor.
It probably would have an exclamation point. The Molten Meteor!
The Molten Meteor! Until producers overheard screenwriter Kay Linker refer to the film's monster as The Blob.
That just seemed like it would be much easier when you're talking during the production. It's like... Okay, and then the multimeter does this, and then the multimeter does it. It's like, okay, I'm just going to call it the damn thing the blob.
Well, especially because it just looks like a blob.
Yeah.
And then the blob will do this, and the blob will do that. Other resources give a different account, saying the film went through a number of title changes. The monster was called The Mass in a shooting script.
Boring.
Definitely not as flowy as The Blob. The Mass. Before the makers settled on The Glob. After hearing the cartoonist Walt Kelly had used The Glob as a title for his Pogo children's book, which what book for a kid is named The Glob?
I don't know.
A weird one. They mistakenly believed that they could no longer use that title, so they changed it to The Blob.
The Blob.
The Blah Blah. The Blob was directed by Irvine Yeaworth, who had directed more than 400 films for motivational, educational, and religious purposes. It was also co-directed by Russell S. Doughton, but he went uncredited.
Yeah, he was, he has a long career after this, and we'll talk about that. though the budget was set at $120,000, it ended up costing only $110,000.
Wow, saving some money.
Yeah, and That's actually a really good thing in the film. Yeah. You usually go over budget.
In the 50s, especially. So this film was directed by Irving S. Yeaworth Jr. and Russell S. Doughton Jr. and was produced by Jack H. Harris. Yeaworth directed a number of 50s and 60s B-movies along with The Blob, including The 4D Man and one of Jarrett's old favorites,
Dinosaurus. Where two dinosaurs and a caveman.
Whoa.
Which, it's already historically inaccurate there, but it's still a fun movie. They wash up on shore on an island, and they befriend a young boy, except for the T-Rex. There's a T-Rex and a Apatosaurus, or as they call it, a Brontosaurus back then.
You're already losing me. Come on.
Okay. It's a T-Rex, a Brontosaurus, and a caveman. See? And they wash up on the shore. And then the caveman and the Brontosaurus, they become friends with the little boy. And then they fight the T-Rex with a bulldozer.
What?
That's what the end is.
With a bulldozer.
Yes. Actually, I think it's an excavator, but it's heavy machinery.
They fight it with heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Does this man know that there was no heavy machinery either during the dinosaurs?
Well, no. They wash up on shore in modern times.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is this a good movie?
It's very fun. There's a lot
of... everything I learned from movies, I know what movie we should roast next.
Yeah, Dinosaurus.
So, Doughton had produced dozens of films, most of them about biblical prophecy.
Yeah, this is a chore to even read the synopsis of these movies.
The trials and tribulations of being Christian in a changing America. Like what happens when a Christian woman falls in love with a non-Christian man.
What?
What happens when an employer changes the work week to Wednesday to Sunday?
What are we gonna do?
What happens when a woman who finally has the life she wants finds out she's now living in the end times?
Oh, I had it.
I hate it. Harris and Yeaworth planned on distributing the film themselves, but Paramount picked up the distribution for $300,000. Giving the filmmakers an instant profit. Paramount added a hip rock theme song. Play that song, Jarrett!
Here it is, that hip song, the theme from The Blob.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door, all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
Man, that's a good song.
Woo! It was just me.
I feel like covering that song. With a hip punk rock edge.
Hip punk rock cover.
Anyways.
So, The Blob first premiered as the B film of the double film with I Married a Monster from Outer Space in 1958.
That sounds like a reality show from now.
I know, like on TLC or TRL, what is it? VH1?
Yeah, it's like, up next after Little Women, I Married a Monster from Outer Space. Atlanta.
Next week on I Married a Monster from Outer Space, Los Angeles.
Ah, you bitch!
The review in the New York Times highlighted some of the problems and identified some of the positives, although Steve McQueen's debut was not one of them. Concentrating on director Irvine Yeaworth's work, unfortunately his picture talks itself to death. Even with The Blob nibbling away at everybody in sight, and most of his trick effects under the direction of Irvine S. Yeaworth Jr. look pretty phony.
Despite that review, The Blob ended up a hit.
Yeah!
Grossing $4 million at the box office, it became a cult sci-fi hit despite its reviews, even though I just said that.
So, fuck you, papers. I didn't want to say media. We need the media.
Because of this cult status, since the year 2000, the town of Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, one of the filming locations has held an annual Blobfest.
Which we need to go to.
Yeah, I would go to Blobfest.
I want to go to Blobfest. It sounds amazing.
What do they do there?
They hold a reenactment of the scene in which moviegoers run screaming from the town's colonial theater.
I don't know if you noticed this, but in that scene, there's a lot of people that are getting trampled.
Yeah. I was like, there has to at least be someone severely injured in this.
Even like the main character, like the more main characters, like the cops that are trying to go in the theater, like they're like fighting those people.
I know, like those people, they told them like, run for your fucking life.
Yeah.
And
they're like, we're extras and we're going to make ourselves seen.
But the theater has recently been restored. Chef's Diner in Downington is also restored and is open for business or photographs of the basement on a weekday morning only.
Yeah. Even though in the film it makes it look like they're pretty close to each other. Like
they're like across town.
Yeah, they're pretty much, I think they're even a couple miles across town.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty common in movies, but yeah, it's a little fact.
Yeah, like in Baby Driver, the first like, car chase scene in the Subaru.
Yeah.
Like someone did like a trace of the chase scene and it's like all over the city jumping around.
At one point it's pretty close that he stays on the line, but then he jumps to the freeway and then
I mean, movie magic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though.
So, going on to the actors, 28-year-old Steve McQueen received $3,000 for his starring role. He turned down an offer for a smaller upfront fee in return for a 10% percent of the profits. Thinking that the film would never make any money, he needed his signing fee immediately to pay for food and rent, which is so sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he didn't become a huge star after, but...
Well, he could have gotten 10% of $4 million.
Yeah.
Instead, he's like, I need $3,000 to feed myself. That is really sad.
Yeah. I mean, he had a hard life before he was even a big actor, so.
But everyone says he was like a gigantic asshole, so.
Yeah.
Kind of don't feel bad.
He was a prima donna, but he also did things like he would ask for things in bulk, like from the movie crew. Like.
What?
Yeah, he would ask for like boxes of jeans and razors and like toothbrushes, and then he would donate those to the boys' school that he came from, like because he was like he went to a reform school, so he would donate to the schools that he went to.
So he was an asshole to everybody, but the fucked up kids.
Yep.
All right, you know, I could jive with that. We're pretty big assholes.
But it said that he lived down the street from James Garner from our last episode of Fire in the Sky, and James Garner said that he kept his front yard really neat.
Wow. What a factor. Thank you.
You heard it here. Steve McQueen's front yard was really neat.
And now he's dead.
Put that in the newspaper.
Heard it here first. So, he went on to only greater success, starring in classic film like The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape.
One of the best movies that he's in.
And The Bullet.
The Bullet?
The Bullet. That's what you wrote.
It says Bullet.
Bullet. That's what I said.
You said The Bullet.
What's Bullet? Steve McQueen had the poster of this film on his bedroom wall at the time of his death.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. He always had a soft spot for the Blob. Steve McQueen and co-star Annetta Corsault didn't care for each other. And by the end of the film, they despised each other. Unfortunately, the makeout scene that opens the movie was the last scene they shot. If you can't tell, she really fucking hates him in that scene. Like, it was uncomfortable, like, to go from her hating him to, like, the rest of the movie where they're, like, really close.
Yeah.
Because, like, from watching that first part, I'm like, what? All of a sudden they're, like, dating? What the fuck? Like, it seems like she hates his guts. Like, she did not do a good job of covering up how much she hated him in the beginning.
Nah. Yeah, Anita Corsault, she was mostly known for being Andy Griffith's girlfriend.
Aww. And this was the last movie of that crazy old man from Them.
Yeah, the guy from Them is also in this movie. The guy that's like, make me a sergeant, charge the booze. He's our favorite from Them, really.
Yeah, he was our favorite from that. And then this, he gets eaten by the blob first.
Yep.
So there are some pretty dope practical special effects in this movie. The blob itself was made from silicone with increasing amounts of red vegetable dye added as it, quote-unquote, absorbed people. In 1965, it was bought by film collector Wes Schenck, and it has been rumored that the blob has never hardened or dried. It is still blobby.
It's never deblobified.
Never deblobified, still blob. In the early shots, the blob was created with a modified weather balloon, and in the later shots, with colored silicone gel.
Early use of silicone.
Hell yeah. And now silicone's used for everything.
Yeah.
From bowls to your tits.
The blob was just an early tit.
The blob. An early tit. To be the new tagline. So for the diner scene, a photograph of the building was put on a gyroscopically operated table onto which cameras had been mounted. The table was shaken and the blob rolled off. When the film negative was printed in reverse, it appeared to be oozing over the building.
That's a really cool way to make the blob look like it's going on the diner.
Yeah, and I mean, there's plenty of times when you can see like the film rate has been sped up. Or, like, you can tell, but, like, it's very well done. Like, it's not, like, sloppy. It's just, you know, with the trained eye of being in the modern times.
And there's a couple shots where they use miniatures of the blob and miniature, like, the scene where it's coming through the windows into the theater. Those windows are miniature and it oozed out. And you can kind of tell, but it's... It definitely looks good, especially, I'm sure in the time it was very well done.
Yeah, definitely. Bart Sloan is credited for special effects. He also served as the art director and animator. So there is animation in this movie. I didn't even notice until they're in the diner and you see the blob coming through the cracks of the windows.
Oh, also when they... The cop shoots the capacitor of the power line and it comes down.
That's animated.
It looks really well done, even though it's a split second. It almost looks Disney quality, the animation.
Yeah, it's really good. And when the diner's on fire and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely different than live.
Bart Sloan was also in religious filmmaking.
Yeah.
But he did work on one more... sci-fi movie, The 40 Man, with the director as well, this director.
Yes. But I had no idea until Jarrett told me that. I was like, oh my gosh, are all these people in religious films?
It's crazy how many...
They made one of the best monster movies ever!
That's why I'm like, there has to be some kind of a religious metaphor in here. They would not just put a straight through... fun sci-fi movie. They have to slip something in there.
Yeah, and then, like, they let teenagers be right?
Yeah, they would...
And all this shit? What?
Why would religious filmmakers let teenagers be the heroes of the movie?
I don't know. Don't ask me. So this movie was remade. It was remade in 1988, which I have not seen.
It's pretty good.
I have not seen it.
It's a lot more haunting.
So it's like, scarier.
Yeah, and when the blob takes over humans, you could see the humans inside, like, being absorbed.
Ew.
You can definitely Google image of that, and they're just, like, they're just dead inside, and, like, it's really ghoulish.
I don't know if I like that.
What's his name? One of the guys from Entourage is in it.
Which one?
The one that, the worst one. Matt Dillon, he's the one... That's, I gotta jerk off before I even get over there.
Oh,
<He's>,
the first line of the Entourage movie.
Yeah. It might not be Matt Dillon. It might be his brother. It's one of the Dillon brothers. One of the Dillon brothers is pretty good.
So it's not Jeremy Piven.
No, not Jeremy Piven.
There's just no good people in that show, is there?
No.
So the remake was co-written by Frank Darabont of Shawshank Redemption fame.
Yep, and of course he created Walking Dead, and he wrote The Mist.
I like The Mist.
The movie The Mist.
I enjoy The Mist. So it changes the origin of the entity to a government experiment gone awry, which I don't like.
That's probably one of the parts that I don't like about the remake. I do like the unknown space origin of the original.
Yeah, and that's the part of it that's a true story.
Yeah, but it might be remade again, possibly.
From last I heard, Rob Zombie dropped it.
Oh, okay.
But Rob Zombie was talking about remaking it. Fingers crossed he picks it back up, because what would be way weird than a Rob Zombie The Blob remake?
Well, Rob Zombie really, really likes horror movies. And
he does.
He does respect them a lot, and he's one of the ones that... He made one of the few serviceable, like, the few couple serviceable reboots with his Halloween and his... Jason reboots.
Yeah, so. I mean, I really liked the first Halloween that he did. I like how it went into the backstory of Michael. But anyway, yes, that is the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's The Blob.
That's The Blob! And, I mean, thanks as always for taking a listen. It was fun.
Yeah.
So, next month is, as you know, Christmas. Krampus. And we're going to have some Christmassy themes to shoot at you on the polls.
Yeah, we're going to be a poll. There's going to be a poll, so look for that poll.
Look for the poll on the Twitter.
You might even say it's a North Pole.
Whoa! Santa Claus. Also, get ready, because since this is a long month, and also the end of the year... We're going to do a bonus episode.
Yeah.
At the end of this month after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about our fave sci-fi from the year, the best of this year, the worst of this year, sci-fi of 2017.
Yeah, and we might even pick a movie and talk about it a little bit. I don't know.
Who knows what we're going to do? It's a surprise for you.
Yeah, maybe we'll bring in a guest. I don't know.
Maybe we'll just fart the whole episode.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have Pickles do the episode. Our dog.
Pickles the Doog.
Pickles, you want to do the episode?
No.
No. All right, well, we love you. You're special. Mwah, mwah, mwah. If you could, just please, please, please go on iTunes. Stitcher. We're on Google Play now.
Yeah, we're on Overcast. We're on Podcatcher.
We're on it all.
Yeah.
If there's a place you can't find us, let us know. We'll put us on there.
Yeah.
And if you could go on iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe and give us not one, not two, not three, not four, but five stars. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
And, so that was great.
Yeah, so if you haven't already, like us on Instagram and...
Like us on Facebook.
And follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
And
feel free to comment and give us some feedback and whatever.
Yeah, seriously.
Look for that poll.
Look for that poll. And as always, we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah, hail Godzilla.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise him.
Praise be our Lord and Savior Godzilla. See what movie's playing next at Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In on Instagram, Facebook, and our website, justaddthat.com. Catch us on Twitter at SFDFDI Podcast.
We sure hope you enjoyed the movie. Thank you for joining us. As always, we're glad to have you. Please replace your speaker, dispense of all trash, and watch for children as you carefully exit our theater. Good night.